Hey guys, it's Sammy
and Robbie
back again to tell you about another upcoming con.
And we're super excited about this one.
Mm-hmm. It's another Indiana one. This one is PopCon, Indie PopCon to be exact. And it's going to be in Indianapolis, again at the Convention Center.
Indiana Convention Center.
Right in downtown Indianapolis. And Robbie will be there April 26th through the 28th.
Yes. We were just at the Indiana Comic-Con, so if you missed us, you get a chance to meet us again at PopCon.
Yes, well, at least Robbie.
At least me. Ashley will be there.
Oh, yeah, Ashley will be there. That's an exciting thing.
Ashley will be there, so you get to meet a lot of us on the network.
Yeah, two-thirds.
Two-thirds of it, yes.
There you go. Yeah.
So if you're coming to the show, please stop by the Limitless Broadcasting booth. We're always excited to see you.
All right. Well, I guess we'll see you guys at the show.
Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to the Limitless Broadcasting Network.
All it takes is faith and trust. Oh, and something I forgot. Dust. Just a little bit of pixie dust.
Welcome, foolish mortals, to the Pixie Dust Twins podcast. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Sammy.
Please stand clear of the doors. Por favor, manténganse alejado de las puertas.
Shall we begin?
It's time to get things started on the most sensational, inspirational, celebrational, motivational show!
Welcome, Pixie Dusters. We're your favorite hosts. I'm Sammy.
And I'm Ashley. Welcome to the Pixie Dust Twins podcast featuring Dan.
And as always, we are produced by Limitless Broadcasting. Make sure after the show you go check out all of our social medias, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, etc.
The works.
All the things.
Yes, all the things. I cannot believe it's April and I cannot believe we're already in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Time flies, man. Time flies.
It really does. Like, the next thing you know, we're going to be in Harry Potter, and I'm going to be like, wait a second, I didn't read everything yet.
I know. That whole section of this is just going to spawn out into its own podcast in and of itself. Like, it's just going to manifest as something else.
Well, where have I mentioned it? I've mentioned it on my own podcast.
Oh, your show. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I posted it on TikTok about us doing Harry Potter this summer. And I've had a ton of people at that point be like, what's your show called? When is the Harry Potter podcast
coming out?
Oh, our views are going to like rocket during Harry Potter summer.
I'm anticipating
summer.
That. Mm-hmm.
Everyone is still just obsessed.
That's right.
They are. But this month, Pixie Dusters, April and May, we're doing a little shorter Star Wars than what we've done. Well, I mean, the shortest we've done is 1 month, but shorter than last year.
Yeah.
We are doing a lot of the randomness of Star Wars. So first two episodes, we're talking about the history of George Lucas. We're talking about the history of John Williams, our amazing composer who we love so much.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going into vintage, so Ewoks and the droid series, and yes, we are going to talk about the infamous Star Wars holiday special.
I'm excited.
Special that shall not be named.
Yes, the only place you can get it is on YouTube, and it's like bootleg versions because I read George Lucas bought up everything so no one could ever distribute or put it on air.
No one must see
this morning, and I'm like, oh dang, he bought everything.
You know, I'm pretty sure my family's got like an old VHS that they actually recorded when it came out.
Wow.
I guarantee you, if I did some digging, I'd probably find it. Because that's the first time I ever saw it was on that.
Well, that's literally the only way anyone could have it is if they recorded it after it was me.
That's hilarious.
When it came out. We're gonna do a lot of that stuff. We also are gonna talk about Andor. We're also gonna talk about The Mandalorian, which is out right now, going on its episodes. as of today, I don't know where it is. I haven't even started watching it yet as of our recording day, but I don't think I'm missing anything. Episode list.
Tales of the Jedi. I don't think you said
Tales of the Jedi. Right. That is a new TV show that came out as well. It's a cartoon. It's a short cartoon, so I'm excited for that as well. And then we have some like droid, like vintage droids and stuff. So sweet. It'll be a good 2 months. And of course, as always, we have a couple Star Wars fans other than us three that are going to be joining us. Ike from Ike's Flame, Isaac, who was on our show in November, is going to be joining us towards the end of the series. We have a new guest. Her name is Lexi.
I got to coordinate with her.
She is going to be on one episode. We don't know which one yet. Was there anybody else? Or was it just Lexi? And
I don't know if you were going to ask Hope if she wanted to be on any Star Wars related thing.
Ah, yes. And I'm going to, well, that one's not actually one that we've talked to yet. So I'm not going to announce that until later. But yeah, cool. So we'll see other faces on the podcast. So we'll have a fourth box.
Nice.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
It is growing. Yeah. The podcast is growing.
Yes. I love guests.
I know, I love guests too. Okay, so let's jump in. We are talking about George Lucas, or in full name, George Walton Lucas Jr. He's a junior.
I never knew that.
I didn't know that.
Literally never knew that.
I find that so funny because of Indiana Jones.
Junior. Oh my, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm like, okay, things are
putting
connected.
More of himself.
There's a tie in.
His work.
Yeah. He was actually born May 14th. Holla, May birthdays. I make them. But he's 1944. A little older.
Slightly removed from our generation.
In Modesto, California. Of course, he is known as a motion picture director, producer, screenwriter, and of course has created several of the most popular films in history. Just so you guys know, because I'm a stickler with sources, I use Britannica.com for a lot of his stuff. I used Wikipedia because some of it is true. What else did I use? I think Biography.com. So I got all this stuff from different sources. This is not something I wrote myself, just FYI. Well, English.
That's why we have English people here. Or English,
That's why it's where my brain goes every time. What was my source so I don't get so I don't get called plagiarism?
Exactly. Or misinformation.
Or misinformation, yes. He is the son of a small town stationer and a mother who was often hospitalized for long periods of ill health. So his mom wasn't doing so hot. He was born and raised in a Methodist family, and a lot of the religious and mythical themes in Star Wars were actually inspired by his interest in the writings of mythology from Joseph Campbell. So pretty much, he grew up in the Methodist faith. He thought it was interesting, but he really liked the mythology side of religion and started to identify strongly in the Eastern religious philosophies and then decided to incorporate a lot of that into the major inspiration for the Force. Right. So the Force is, if you do not know, I mean, the Force, like for me as a, because I identify as a Christian, for me, I look at the Force and I can identify it with my religion, but any religion really can identify with the Force because it really is kind of an all-encompassing thing that feels very tied strongly into just religion in general.
Yeah. Right. It's archetypal. I mean, there's any story that you see from any culture or spirituality or whatever, there's always a sense of, you know, light versus dark, you know, good versus evil, like, you know, and especially like with the Eastern side, like it's kind of hard to get away from that when it comes to the Force, because in the East, it's very much about balance.
Yes.
About, you know, like the yin and the yang and all that. So it's you definitely see a lot of that permeating through his work.
Yeah. And he came to state at one point in his life that his religion is Buddhist Methodist.
I can see that.
Is that a real thing or has he made that up? He's just combining things.
I'm sure there's people who identify that. I've never heard of that personally, but I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm going to look into it. I saw that when I was doing the notes. I'm like, that sounds interesting. I want to know what that is.
I would imagine it's like the foundational beliefs of some things of Methodist, but like with the practice of Buddhism. I mean, I don't know much about Buddhism, but I know there's a lot of it has to do with like I said, balance.
Well, it's just an interesting combination because on the Methodist side, they only believe in mono God.
Right.
And then on the Buddhist side, they believe in poly.
Right. Multiple.
Multiple.
Are there multiple? I didn't know there were any gods in Buddhism. I thought it was just like
isn't there? Or am I thinking of Hinduism?
I think that's Hinduism. Polytheism. Yeah.
Maybe I'm mixing them up.
Yeah. No, that's definitely Hinduism. You're right.
I'll do the research. It'll be fine.
We'll get there eventually.
Well, this is not the podcast for.
Yeah.
Anyways, moving on. He actually became interested in filmmaking while he was in high school. He was also a car racing fanatic. And as a teenager, had a near-fail crash at 18, which convinced him to give up the sport.
That'll do it.
So if he didn't have a near-fatal crash, we might have never had Star Wars. Interesting. But anyways, his interest in movie making was encouraged by cinematographer Haskell Wexler. I don't know who this person is. I'm assuming it's a teacher of some person. So the funny thing is I heard this. We're all highlighting it right now.
We're like Google.
So what's interesting is Haskell Wexler was a name that was used in a TV show that I love. It's at a college. It was like Wexler College, and it was like a supernatural school. Have you guys ever heard of the Librarians?
I've heard of
yes.
it.
Yes. And okay. I think that's because I know the name rings a bell. I couldn't place where.
Mm-hmm. It's in one of the episodes of The Librarians, which is like one of my favorite shows.
Gotcha.
So did you find anything, Sammy?
Let's see. He was a consultant on American Graffiti. Let's see. What else? He was a cinematographer on America, America. And I have no idea what that is, but apparently that was big enough that Wikipedia mentioned it. By the way, I just went to Wikipedia. That seemed the easiest way to do it. I have not heard. He did work on television's The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. I feel like I maybe heard that, right? Yeah.
Well, cinematography, like, Dan, pretty much cinematography is just, like, camera. Give us an explanation of what that is.
So basically cinematography is the direction of the overall visual look and feel of a film. So it's more than just camera. It's how it's going to, how the scene's going to be set up, what the lighting's going to look like, how it's going to be, you know, shapes and lines and the overall tone.
This is why we have Dan. He has this degree.
I know a little bit about it. But yeah, no, it literally is like you're kind of a maestro. Like, you know, look at it as in a way you're kind of a conductor. And then like the camera operators are like the individual people who play the instruments. Cinematographer is like, you know, the kind of, I mean, he does camera work usually, but it's his vision that guides everything.
So he's like the film version of John Williams.
Kind of, yeah. I mean,
John Williams is a conductor.
Cinematography in terms of visual style.
Yeah,
And obviously,
I'm not saying exactly the same, but like they're
There's really it's kind of like a top three when it comes to film. There's the director, obviously, and then there's a cinematographer, and then the first AD. They're the ones who kind of like are in charge of everything on set.
Right.
So they're kind of like the main, you know, the Holy Trinity.
Yeah, help bring the story together.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Well, a common joke back in film school was, what's the biggest difference between a cinematographer and God? God doesn't think he's a cinematographer.
I could see that, unfortunately.
Okay, that's funny.
Cinematographers, they tend to get egos.
Yes.
Yes. Don't most people in this industry.
Oh, indeed. Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, one more thing. He was fired from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. So there you go.
Oh, dang.
He was fired.
That might be why we don't know why he was anymore.
Okay.
Let me see. Oh, it does say. It says he thinks he was fired because he has radical left political views.
In Hollywood?
I don't know. That's what.
And he got fired for left?
Yeah.
Well, if it's during One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, I was probably a little more conservative back then, I'm guessing.
Potentially, yeah.
Because that was what, 75. The late
70s, 75,
right? 75,
yeah. One flew over the cuckoo's nest was... very left cuckoo.
I mean, that wouldn't strike me as a right.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah. I have. I had to watch it for, what did I have to watch it for? One of my film classes.
I would not say it's a right-wing film at all.
Creative writing.
Mm-mm.
When I did my creative writing master's, I had to do a film class or two for screenwriting, and they made us watch movies, and Cuckoo's Nest was one of them. I actually owned it. I got rid of it, though. I was like, I'm never going to open this again.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
No, because we had to read it in school, too. And I think we watched it in school.
Oh.
Yeah. I had to get on that.
Themes of Literature with, what was her name? The teacher you guys didn't like sophomore year for your honors class. Can't remember her name.
Oops.
Sammy's not listening to me.
Okay.
Oh, you're talking to me? I thought you were I'm sorry. I was not listening.
I didn't have a teacher I didn't like.
Wait, start this again. I'm so sorry.
Who was your honors teacher? What was it, sophomore or junior year? It was a female. You guys hated her.
Was it Miss Chapman? No.
Yes, Chapman.
Yeah.
I had themes of literature with Miss Chapman.
Okay, we didn't like her at first because she was a new teacher and she was trying to like assert her dominance and it was like a whole thing. And we were like, you just calm down. We're not that serious in this class. It's okay. And then we liked her after that. It just warmed up to her.
Gotcha. I liked her. Anyway.
I had a music professor who tried that and then never mellowed out.
So. Yeah, see, that's not good. It doesn't work well.
Nah.
Well, that's not okay. Side note, that's what they actually teach you in education is to go in hard like that, so that way they know that you are in charge. But I had to do that too because I was a 22-year-old teaching 17 and 18-year-olds, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work at all. Like I think that was half my problem when I was teaching. The other half was the fact that I was a 22-year-old teaching 17 and 18-year-olds.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Practically the same age. Way off topic.
Yeah.
No, go ahead, Dan.
No, I was gonna say it seems like it would be a self-defeating thing. It's like the more you try to assert your dominance, the more they lash back. So it's just destructive pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's gotta be a balance in there somewhere. I'm not a teacher, so you know, I have taught like a one-on-one, like I've taught guitar before, and I've noticed that like when you really just trying to get on their level and explaining things with authority, not so much authority over them, but authority on the topic, and then like asking them, okay, does this make sense? Does this resonate with you? And if not, how can I explain it better? In my experience, that's been better. But again, that's one-on-one personal. That's not a classroom setting. So,
but honestly, thinking back on like the teachers we had and then thinking on like what I'm doing now, even though I'm not teaching in school, I'm teaching ministry, or I did teach ministry. It's the same thing. It is exactly what you just said. It's more of, you don't want to go in like thinking your way up here. You need to go in and get on their level, but also have an authority on the topic and relate to them in some way, shape or form. But for some reason, when you go in as a new teacher, the professors in school always teach you like they're not your friends, but, and there is a fine line between friendship and your authority, but you got to find that balance. And sadly, how they teach you in college does not teach you well on how to find that balance. You just kind of go in steamrolling and it turns out bad.
Yeah.
But anywho, in 1966, Lucas received a bachelor's degree from the film department of the University of Southern California in LA. And then, let's see here. While there, future director John Millis? I don't know. Who was a classmate. He introduced Lucas to the work of Japanese director. Oh, I'm not going to say this right. Kurosawa Akira. I don't know. I do not speak Japanese.
It's like four paragraphs up from the bottom on
the first page.
Oh, first page. I was in the second one.
Yeah.
But either way, he's an important influence in Lucas's work. Do you see it, Dan?
Yeah, I do see it.
Yeah.
I mean, my best guess, Kurosawa Akira.
Yeah, that sounds better than what I said. We'll go with that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's my, yeah, I don't know. I'm probably a poser on that one.
Lucas began working under Verna Fields for the United States Information Agency, and that is where he met his first wife, Marcia Griffin, working as a teaching instructor for the class of U.S. Navy students who were being taught documentary cinematography. Lucas directed the short film Electronic Labyrinth, THX 11384EB, which won the first prize won first prize in at the 67 to 68 National Student Film Festival. So he actually taught U.S. students, U.S. Navy students, about cinematography during this time.
Oh, sweet.
When he, and that's where he met his wife, his first wife, Marsha, mm-hmm. who I love. She is. So the documentary I watched on like the Star Wars movies, mm-hmm. she was actually in it, like talking like now, like,
oh, sweet.
Mm-hmm. And she just, I love her. She, yeah. I'm very sad that they didn't last. She's pretty cool.
That's cool.
Let's see here. He served a 6-month internship in 67 at Warner Brothers. Mm-hmm. And they signed Lucas to direct a feature length version of his prize winning student film with Pola executive producing and Robert Duvall and Maggie McOwen starring as the illicit lovers. So this was a grim fantasy. So this is that THX 11.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a grim fantasy about a roboticized, dehumanized society in the distant future. So it was released to respective reviews, although it's obvious debt to Orwell's novel 1984, and overly deliberate pace kept it from being embraced too enthusiastically by the critics or audiences. So it was liked, but it wasn't accepted, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but the clips that I have seen, it's definitely, it's pretty grim, like the little clips that I have seen of it. Yeah, so.
Yeah, that doesn't, I mean, especially if it mirrors 1984.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Makes sense. Thank you.
Family film of the year right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Makes sense.
1984.
Let's see here. In 71, Lucas formed the production company, Lucas Films Limited, mm-hmm. Which eventually contained a number of divisions, including Industrial Light and Magic, which was established in 1975, and which was regarded as the most prestigious special effects workshop in American film.
Radical.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And if you want to know more about Industrial Light and Magic, I believe there is a special on Disney Plus about mm-hmm. it.
There Light and Magic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I saw it yesterday and I saw each episode and they were all like an hour and 3 minutes. And I was like, God, I really hope we're not talking about this tomorrow because I have not watched any of it.
No.
And I can't watch 6 hours in one night.
Mm, I don't even think much.
We have it on the list.
I don't think we're talking about Industrial Light and Magic.
Mm-mm. No.
Yeah.
No. Let's see here. So I didn't realize this, but George and Marsha never had like their own child, like physical blood. Mm-hmm. They adopted. So in 81, they adopted Amanda, their first daughter and only daughter, and then divorced 2 years later in 83.
Mm-hmm.
So the documentary I was watching, the Unplugged or something documentary, was talked about their divorce in it because it happened during like the Star Wars movies.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it wrecked George. Like the whole thing just wrecked him. I can't remember exactly why they got divorced. I should have looked it up because Marsha talks about it in the documentary, but it was brutal and it was bad. And it just, they still haven't talked to this day. He still has not talked to her to this day since they got divorced.
Wow.
Something, I think there was like a betrayal felt, or I don't know, something of that nature, but it was not good.
Wow.
And then I didn't know this either. Apparently, even as a single parent, Lucas adopted two more kids, Katie, who was born in 88. So she's my age.
Okay.
And Jet, who was born in 93. So all That's three of his cool. kids are adopted. Mm. I was like, good for you. And then all three of his children has appeared in the Star Wars prequels. Apparently, Lucas was in the prequels as well. Did we talk about this last year? I do not remember Lucas being in the prequels.
I do not recall this.
Mm-mm.
I don't either. So I don't know if this is correct.
All right.
Now, I think I remember his children being in the prequels.
Mm.
I remember talking about it. I don't remember who they were. But I think they weren't they like Anakin's friends or something?
Something like maybe, the little kids running around. But Lucas himself, I'm like, he's directing. Why is he? Why would you say he's in the film? So I think this person might be a little off.
Possibly.
Yeah. Well, and then following his divorce, Lucas was in a relationship with a singer named Linda Ronstadt. I've never heard of her, but she was in the 80s. I'm surprised we even knew he was in a relationship of any sort. She sang like rock, pop, folk, country, and Latin. I don't think she really got that. I don't think she was overly.
Yeah, doesn't sound like she was well known.
It looks like she has some Latin Grammys. She has two Academy Awards, two Emmys, 11 Grammys, three American Music Awards. So apparently she was very big then. So if we said her name to our parents, maybe they would know her.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I'm looking up her songs, trying to see if there's anything I recognize. But
okay.
I don't see any.
Yeah. But apparently that did not last because at some point they broke up and we didn't know anything about his dating life until 2006 when he started dating Melody Hobson, who is the president of Ariel Investments and chair of DreamWorks Animation. Melody, and I think there's a big age difference. When did I say he was born?
44.
Yes, there's a little bit of an age difference. She was born in 69.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I knew it was like 25 years or something like that.
But she's younger than my parents.
Mine too.
Older than my parents. So they started dating in 2006. They announced their engagement in 2013 and married, they announced it in January of 2013. They married in June of the same year at Lucas's Skywalker Ranch in California. And then they have one daughter together via surrogate in 2013. So Lucas has four kids.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. From what I understand, they are still married. There has been no divorce.
Okay.
Lucas is a major collector of American illustrator and painter Norman Rockwell.
Dyslexia there, yeah.
I put the Rockwell, the R in front
Roman
of
Reigns.
Oh boy. Norman Rockwell. He has a collection of 57 Rockwell paintings and drawings. Wow. And fellow Rockwell collector and film director Spielberg, they're displayed at the Smithsonian.
There we go.
From 2010 to 2011 in an exhibit titled Telling Stories.
Wow.
Yeah.
Must be nice to be that rich.
He's an avid art connoisseur.
I would do stuff like that if I had like $1 billion. So.
Sure.
I would have my own library.
Mm-hmm. I would definitely collect artwork 100%.
Yeah.
And be like, I'll loan it to you for your museum.
I'd collect it and then I just create my own like gallery where I just have it displayed. Not as like my own, but like a room in my house, in my mansion, dedicated specifically to that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, obviously. Yeah. If I had that much money, of course.
Yeah. Obviously.
Yeah. What else would you have?
You know he has his own gallery in Skywalker Ranch. Like, he has to.
I'm sure he does. I'm sure he has many, many things that we will never have.
Well, okay. Dan, did you ever see Fanboys?
I did see Fanboys.
Okay. Do you think that some of what they saw, like the gallery with all the artifacts and stuff, do you think that was like real from Skywalker Ranch or like someone's just hopes that's what's there?
I first of all, I doubt it's real because they are more protective of that than like NASA. Like, you know, so as far as I know, like he is just over that. So I would imagine it's a combination of imagination and maybe testimonials of people who have actually been there and like maybe a few pictures that people have seen and then just kind of like expounding on that. I don't know for sure, but I don't see Lucas allowing anybody to actually shoot a film in that ranch.
Well, I didn't think that he would. No, I know he wouldn't let him shoot the film in the ranch, but I wondered let them kind of know what some of the rooms looked like.
Yeah.
Or
it could be
some
that.
Of it, like there's a room they go into where they get grilled by the police officer, and it's like this almost looks like a they're in the Death Star or something. Okay. And it's like, that's not real.
No, but, there's no way.
Like the gallery or something like that. Mm-hmm. But okay. Yeah. Last piece that of personal information, like this is not his history of his films, as you guys can tell, as I, for our listeners, I was trying to give us more of like the person of George Lucas, which they don't give you much. No. They are very, very private. He is a very, very private person, and this is all I got. Mm-hmm. Lucas has said that he is a fan of Seth MacFarlane's hit show Family Guy, so we know one of his favorite TV shows. And MacFarlane has said that Lucasfilms was extremely helpful when the Family Guy crew wanted to parody their work.
I can see that.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I always appreciate about him. He doesn't take himself too seriously. He has no problem laughing at himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, except apparently for Star Wars Holiday Special.
Well, because that's something he did, though. That's
true.
Yeah.
A
bit different.
True.
Okay, so noteworthy films. I mean, I think we all know these, but let's just mention them again. As a director, probably his biggest noteworthy films is, of course, American Graffiti, Star Wars A New Hope, and then all three of the Star Wars prequels.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else that I saw on the director list was either not very well known or was a short, so I didn't add it.
Yeah.
He has a lot bigger, he's a lot longer producer list. So his director list only had 20 films on it. His producer list had about 73.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the ones that I wanted to mention, of course, all the Star Wars movies before Disney took over.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, every single thing of Indiana Jones, not just the Indiana Jones trilogy that he did, but also the Young Adventures of Indiana Jones that I didn't realize were being made all the way up through like early 2000s. I thought they were all in like the 90s, 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, it goes into the little bit of the 2000s.
Huh.
I didn't even know that.
And then also he produced Body Heat, which is a very popular film. Labyrinth, which is one of my favorite films. I know it's weird to be one of my favorite, but I love the Labyrinth. Howard the Duck. And then Willow, the movie, not the TV series.
And then
I did not know this. He helped produce The Land Before Time.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. That threw me off. Mm-mm. I was like, whoa.
It threw me for a loop. I'm like, okay, I have to add this.
Absolutely.
Love okay, George.
Mm-hmm. Love that movie. It's like a generational thing for our generation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Land Before Time, like, gets you right here.
I mean, holy abandonment issues for me, but.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's why it gets us right here.
See, anytime somebody talks about The Lion King and how Mufasa's death scarred them for life, I'm like, you people know nothing. New people know nothing.
That was also our generation.
Yeah, but I was already world weary from watching Littlefoot's mother's death. Okay.
Oh well, yeah.
I was you children know nothing.
Mm-hmm.
What do I have to know? You have to be with me. I'll be with you, even if you can't see me. What do you mean if I can't see you?
No.
I can always see you.
Stop it. No.
Stop.
No.
Don't get me teary-eyed.
Uh-huh. People post that on TikTok and I skip it. I'm like, what is wrong with you? I do not want to see this.
Yeah. You Lion King kids know nothing.
No.
Well, okay. Lion King also was heartbreaking for us.
Mm-hmm. See, it wasn't that heartbreaking for me. I mean, it was sad, but it didn't traumatize me.
It didn't.
Both of them traumatized me.
I think I was pretty horrified by all of it.
Maybe it's because like I overheard somebody talking about it, so I kind of knew it was coming. But even so, like, I mean, my whole thing about, you know, parents dying in movies, I'd already just been like, oh, yeah, all right, I'm already,
you know. It wasn't the parent dying, because every parent dies, parents die in Disney movies all the time. Bambi, for crying out loud.
Which traumatized a lot of people, too.
Yeah, I know. It's the Scar betraying his brother that traumatizes me.
Valid. Totally valid.
Because I can relate.
Interesting.
Yo,
there's a
story. We're gonna leave that there.
Well, now you got me curious.
We can talk after the podcast.
Okay.
But yeah, so Land Before Time, he helped produce it.
Cool.
Awesome. Awards and honors. He has a lot, so I just copy and paste it, and we'll go through some of this.
Mm-hmm.
In 77, he was awarded the Inkpot Award. And why didn't I put down what this is? I even looked it up. Where's my explanation? Darn it. Hold on. Oh, the Comic-Con one. So it's an award that's bestowed annually at Comic-Con International for professions in the field of comic books, comic strips, animation, science fiction, popular culture, blah, blah, blah. In 77, he was awarded that. Let's see here. The American Film Institute awarded Lucas his Lifetime Achievement Award on June 9th, 2005. This was shortly after the release of Revenge of the Sith, which he joked, stating that since he views the entire Star Wars series as one film, he could actually receive the award now that he had finally gone back and finished the movie.
Nice. I can see that.
That's funny.
He's right.
Yeah. He was also nominated for 4 Academy Awards, Best Director in Writing for American Graffiti and Star Wars. I'm assuming he did not receive them, which is stupid.
This says nominated,
He received the Academy's Irving G. Thalberg Award in 1991. Don't know what that is. He appeared at the 79th Annual Academy Awards Ceremony in 2007 with Spielberg and Francis Ford Coppola to present the Best Director Award to their friend Martin Scorsese. During that speech, Spielberg and Coppola talked about the joy of winning an Oscar, making fun of Lucas, who has not won a competitive Oscar.
That's pretty funny.
Love it. That's
pretty funny. The Science Fiction Hall of Fame inducted Lucas in 2006, its second film, television, and media contributor after Spielberg. See here, the Discovery Channel named him one of the 100 greatest Americans in September of 2008. Lucas served as the Grand Marshal for the Tournament of Roses Parade and made the ceremonial coin toss at the Rose Bowl New Year's Day 2007. In 2009, he was one of the 13 California Hall of Fame inductees in the California Museum's year-long exhibit. Be here. In 2013, Lucas was awarded the National Medal of Arts by President Barack Obama for his contribution to American cinema. Mm-hmm. And then in 14, Lucas received honorary membership of the Society of Motion Picture and Television Engineers. So he might have not won a lot of like Oscars and stuff, but he has a lot of accolades that probably fit more of what he does than, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, awards. Yeah, Oscar is a category of its own. It's really
It's like a whole nonsense.
And then in 2015, Lucas was inducted as a Disney legend. And on December 6, 2015, he was an honoree at the Kennedy Center Honors. And then in 2021, coinciding with Lucasfilm's 50th anniversary, an action figure of Lucas in Stormtrooper disguise was released as a part of Hasbro's Star Wars The Black Series.
That's cool.
He has his own action figure as a stormtrooper. I don't know if that's good or bad.
I mean, everything he's achieved up until then has been,
and they make him a stormtrooper,
right? So it's silver letter. It's gold, but the platinum is the platinum achievement that's being an action figure.
That's pretty legit.
Oh boy.
You know, you've really arrived.
When you're an action figure,
I think that it took them a little too long to induct him as a Disney legend, but you know, Disney and their dumbness.
Yeah. Well, but when did Disney buy Star Wars?
But Disney has had a hand or some sort of finger in Star Wars since the 80s when they got Star Wars.
I don't disagree with that, but I don't think they're going to make him a Disney legend. They probably waited until they could get their link.
Josh Gad became a Disney legend barely a decade after he did Frozen.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you. I think their choices in Disney legends sometimes are interesting.
Because I love Josh Gad, but he was not, it's not time for him to be a legend. He needs to do more.
No, but I have a feeling George Lucas was more because they were really finalizing their bond together. So they were linking
the bond that I think he regrets.
Well,
probably.
That's a whole other thing, but yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I try to wonder what the mindset is behind who they make into icons. Like, Frozen was such an iconic film, but I really don't know much about Josh Gad himself, but his name, I guess, is tied to that. I'm assuming.
So he, yeah, so Josh Gad is Olaf. He's the snowman.
The little snowman.
Okay, okay, I got you. See, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Okay, so Gad is Olaf. So literally, like, he is the most popular character in that movie series.
I would agree.
In that movie duo, it's going to be a trilogy soon. They're coming out with Frozen 3.
Another one.
Okay.
Too much Frozen.
Yeah, too much. But it's literally not even been, it just hit a decade. Like 2013 is when the original came out, but he got made into a legend just a couple years ago. And I'm like, you've done nothing else.
It is, because they did all of the Frozen cast, I believe, the same year. They did all of them at the same time. But I will say Josh Gad was he attempted to work at Disney.
He attempted. They turned him down.
So they kind of owed him.
They don't?
Because they were mean to him when he wanted to be a Jungle Cruise skipper, which is pretty funny to me nowadays. Wow. But yeah, maybe they owed him. But they did do the entire Frozen cast, so that was really what it was.
That's cool.
And they probably knew they were going to announce the new movie soon, so they're like, let's bring some more attention to it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear Lord.
Marketing. All this crap is just marketing.
It is. That's what it is. Disney is a marketing company that just happens to make film.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's
what it is.
Yeah.
It used to be a film company.
Yeah.
Mm. All right. Were they, though?
Anything else?
I could debate that. Disney was always about, he wanted to make quality content, but he definitely was in it to get some attention.
He did have an ego, didn't he?
Yeah, but that's okay.
But he was a creator. In his heart, he was a creator. Like, he was a marketer. He was a businessman. He was shrewd, but he had a love for the art itself, too.
Yeah.
Like, that's not everybody can toe that line, and he did.
And George does, too, which I think is really great.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. But they definitely like the money side, too.
Oh, yeah.
Well, who doesn't like money when they start getting their hands on it?
Do you imagine $4.5 billion for something you created? Like, I can't fathom.
See, So I'm a control freak when it comes to my content, like anything I do.
As is George. Uh-huh. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I relate with him on that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've had, what was it? There was a couple people who like sent me actual proposals in my podcast one of like helping me with my marketing through podcasting or helping or through social media. And I'm like, no, I like to control my stuff. I don't want you making my content. Like, no. Mm-hmm. So the idea, like, I don't know how Lucas was able to let it go. Like me, I feel like I would be like, no, you can have it when I die. Like, this is mine.
Well, I know like the podcast I was briefly listening to this morning. Thank you very much, podcast. And I don't remember who was on it. I probably should look that up. Anyway, he was talking about how George Lucas had made this movie about like the fighter pilots. They were a black team of fighter pilots that came back after one of the wars, and they were like shunned because they were black. And it was like a whole thing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, that he made the movie. He paid for the movie. He went to Fox and he's like, we have a great history. Will you please release this movie? And they were like, you have to pay for the marketing because we don't really think this is going to sell. And so he put like $100 million into making the movie, marketing the movie, all of that. He got $50 million back from the box office. And from what he was saying, he thinks that was kind of George's turning point where he was just like, this is just, it's too much work. Because like you said, like he's a creator, like you said, that's what he wants to do. And this was just starting to get too much businessy things, you know, the politics and all that, I think was starting to weigh on him. And he was just like, you know, I just am ready to take a break. And
that's what it does. That's what it does. It just, it kills your creativity. It kills your love for the craft.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was Red Tails.
Red Tails, yeah.
Which I'm surprised that they didn't think it'd be good. Like, it stars Cuba Gooding Jr.
Hmm.
I kind of remember seeing, like, a trailer for it.
Yeah, I remember seeing the trailer for it, too. Mm-hmm. It was 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Gerald McRaney's in it. Like, there are some Terrence Howard's in it.
Mm-hmm.
There's some big names. What? Yeah. Michael B. Jordan's in it?
Wow.
Where? Neo?
I don't know.
Leslie Odom Jr.'s in it? What the heck? Why did Bryan Cranston's in it?
Jeez.
Oh, yeah.
Why would they not think this was going to do well?
Because they're studio execs.
dumb.
And they're very, very stupid.
I am not putting this on my list. I've not seen this movie. I want to watch it.
I don't think I've ever seen it, but I definitely remember like the trailer for it.
I don't think I remember that. I'm trying to think back. Like, maybe I probably saw it and it just, I don't know. I'm trying to...
I don't know. Mm. I'm just adding it.
Yeah.
That's gonna.
I'm sure it's a good movie. I mean,
notification.
No, it sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It does. So it's a crew of African American pilots in the Tuskegee, something like that, training program.
Okay.
Having faced segregation while kept mostly on the ground during World War II, are called into duty under the guidance of Colonel A.J. Bullard. So World War II fighter pilots.
Huh. No.
Wait, who is Bullard? Who played Bullard? Where are you, Bullard? Terrence Howard.
Okay.
Interesting.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else about George that either of you know or have heard that you want to share on today's podcast?
No, I think you pretty much nailed it. I will say this, like what you were saying about him being, you know, parting from his creation when he sold it to Disney, like part of it, I believe, was the Hollywood stuff, but I think a big part of that, and we've talked about this before, like it was kind of our fault, as in like the fans collectively, because we really went hard on him with the prequels.
That's fair.
I mean, the prequels have their problems and we're all aware of it, but like he did not deserve that much abuse when they, when they came out, you know? And yeah, I mean, even I look at myself and I'm like the way I was back then, like I never openly posted how much I disliked them, but I remember in my mind, like, raging against George Lucas, and I was like, good God, it's like, no, that's horrible. Like, it was a horrible mindset to have. So like at that point, I feel like he was kind of like, you know, he just kind of got burned too much. He didn't care anymore, you know?
Yeah, that's probably
And
true.
I think we kind of bear the responsibility of that a little bit.
Yeah, I can see that.
But, me too, yeah.
You know what's funny? I loved Phantom Menace when it came out. I loved
Same.
It.
Same.
And I believe I loved Attack of the Clones. I'm pretty sure, like, growing up, like, when those came out, I loved both of them. Mm-hmm. What I hated was Revenge of the Sith. And it wasn't because of George. It was because I knew what was going to happen.
Right.
And I didn't want to see it happen.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think when I got older is when I started, like, what are these movies? Why were they made this way sort of deal? But when they were coming out, I know I enjoyed them. I didn't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember enjoying The Phantom Menace when I first saw it, and I remember enjoying it when I saw it again when it came out on VHS back then, but I remember enjoying it a little bit less, and then each time I saw it, I enjoyed it less and less and less, and then I was like, I really don't care for this movie very much, and then Attack of the Clones came out, and I was like, yes, it's okay, but it's kind of slow pace, it's losing me, and then Revenge of the Sith came out, and I was like, yes, this is what I want, I like this, and to this day, that's still kind of how I feel about it, so, I don't know, it's interesting.
When I rewatched the prequels last year when we did our Star Wars summer, I don't remember what I said, but part of me feels like I still do enjoy Phantom Menace. I still do enjoy kind of watching the younger part of Anakin.
For sure.
Kind of, you got young Obi-Wan. Just that part of the story, I think I still kind of, the little kid in me still really enjoys it. I hate Attack of the Clones.
Fair enough.
Not because of George.
Right.
Not because of the storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Anakin just gets whiny. You know what he reminds me of? And I mean, this came out before, I think, Harry Potter's fifth book. But it reminds, like, Attack of the Clones reminds me of whiny Harry Potter.
I hate watching
Order of the Phoenix so because dramatic. Of how whiny he is.
Shut up. I get it. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, it's he's definitely hard to like in that movie. I remember that.
It's a good association. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All the other scenes in Attack of the Clones, like with Obi-Wan and what he's doing when we meet Jango. I can watch that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anakin and...
Do you remember a YouTube creator called That Guy with the Glasses?
Vaguely.
I think it's the same guy. He does another one called, or he's known as, it's slipping me. Oh, complete brain fart. He still does stuff, but he changed his brand. I think it's Nostalgia Critic. I think that's right. Anyway, but back in YouTube's early heydays, he would do these this series of videos called Movies in 5 Seconds. So he'd take famous movies and condense it down to here's the story in 5 seconds. You know, Star Wars in 5 seconds, Jurassic Park in 5 seconds, and he did Attack of the Clones. And it's literally just him doing a voiceover with clips of Anakin, and he's going, "I'm happy, I'm sad, I'm confused, I'm in love, I'm frustrated, I'm torn, I'm weak, I'm emotionally distraught by the turn of events that have been bestowed upon me." And then it cuts to Obi-Wan going, "Oh God, aren't you Darth Vader yet?"
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, pretty much sums it up right there.
Yeah.
Funny.
Accurate. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we should probably wrap this up. Pixie Dusters, I hope you learned a little something new about our favorite director today. As we walk into the rest of our Star Wars stuff we're going to be talking about. Join us next week as we talk about our ultimate favorite composer who will probably be composing music for Star Wars until he dies, John Williams. So have a great week, Pixie Dusters. We'll see you then.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Pixie Dust Twins, Sammy and Ashley. Make sure you like, follow, and subscribe to the Limitless Podcast Network's own channel, Instagram, and all things social media. And we'll see you all real soon.